This afternoon, we're going to be hearing from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 12, entitled Devotional Service. In this section of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is explaining who is very dear to him. And there are several verses in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead explains how you can become very dear to the Supreme Lord. Certainly everybody here would like to think of themselves as being dear to someone. That is our heart's desire, that at least one person would think of us in a very dear way. People do so many things just to have a relationship in which they can feel endeared to someone and someone can be endeared to them. It's a very nice feeling, for however it lasts, that you are dear to someone, they are dear to you. Now, this tendency to want to be dear to someone, it's coming from the spiritual world. When the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhu Mata Sarvam Savartate, Krishna says, I am the origin of everything, material and spiritual. Everything emanates from me. When the Lord explains that, everything means everything. So we have to analyze our life and see how all the things in our life are coming from Krishna. That is the fun of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is not some kind of dry, theoretical religious belief. No. Krishna consciousness is the daily, or 24-hour day, ability to see the connection to Krishna in everything. When you can actually see the connection to Krishna in everything, then for you, you are beyond happiness and distress, and you are situated in transcendental bliss. To get you in that situation is the goal of Bhagavad Gita. Naturally then, we're concerned. How do we become very dear to Krishna? Once we understand who Krishna is, then we become very eager to become dear to Krishna. Certainly you all know the result of becoming dear to some temporary person in a temporary relationship. It's simply a question of how long that feeling of being dear can last. All relationships in the material world that are not founded upon the spiritual reality are torn apart by time. So whenever you try to establish a material relationship with someone, you are fighting with time. And guess who always loses in a fight with time? Some of you may have in your house one of these old-fashioned, I think they call them grandfather clocks, that make a loud tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. I remember as a very little boy, my grandmother and grandfather had a grandfather clock, and whenever we would visit them, my brother and I would sleep in the living room, and so there was this loud grandfather clock just ticking and talking all night long. Tick, tock, tick, tock. The body is just like that. Now I understand. Having studied Bhagavad Gita, you can also understand that this body is just a big clock. And it's only a matter of time before the clock of the body runs down. You don't know when. An alarm clock you can set. You're going to go off 4 in the morning. But what the alarm is on this body, we don't know. So, how do people establish relationships in this world? You have one clock and another clock. And then you put them together, and that's a relationship. So you have a lot of loud ticking and talking going on. Instead of one clock, you have two clocks together. And then those two clocks produce more clocks. Then you have a big clock family. And they're all ticking and talking together. Mama clock, papa clock, baby clocks. Now, of course, there's more to it than that. There is the emotional exchanges that are sometimes favorable and sometimes not favorable. But my point is, yes, we should acknowledge there are the emotional exchanges, but all the emotional exchanges are going on with time in the background and time in the foreground. Now, we like to shove time into the background so we don't have to think about it. But what Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita will help you to see that no matter how you think you're shoving time this way and that way, actually time is always the predominating reality in the material world. So, as soon as we choose to live materially, we are choosing to surrender to time. Because time rules matter and all the interactions of matter. Consequently, the transcendentalist said, how can you look for happiness in a region that is ruled by time? Not possible. Time deteriorates everything. It ruins our best ambitions. It ruins our best feelings. It deteriorates our happiest experiences. Things that appear to us to be so fresh are spoiled by time. And yes, it is time that spoils relationships. Probably many of you here in this room have had the experience of a relationship which seemed so fresh and zesty in the beginning, and then as time went by, you had to admit the loving feeling is gone, or we're not resonating anymore as we used to. So many excuses are given rather than just say, time has spoiled. Sure, you can think of better excuses than I have, better things you've said in order to present the reality of time. I think we should move on now. I think you deserve someone better. That was a good one. All this simply means that time has spoiled things. And this hurts us because we want nice relationships. We want warm, cozy relationships in which we can feel dear to someone and someone can feel dear to us. But what we refuse to see are the ravages of time. Instead, we get mad at the other person. You aren't the same as you used to be. You don't act toward me in that same tender way. Or I just don't feel the same vibrations from you. You always blame the other person. No one blames time. No one says, look, you tried your best, I tried my best, but time has deteriorated this relationship. It is not possible for anything material to remain fresh. Not possible. Whether it's gross matter, like this wood or this metal, or subtle matter, like emotions and thoughts. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that the inferior potency, matter, is of two types, gross and subtle. Both types, the gross matter and the subtle matter, thoughts, emotions, so forth, both are ruled by time. So this is what causes the problem in our relationships. But we don't think like that. We think that our relationships are a special category, immune to the ravages of time. Because I feel this way, and you feel that way. And when the relationship starts, particularly in romantic relationships, you practically feel like you've got a special exemption from time. You practically feel like you're in your own dimension, free from the laws of time and space. You get that dizzy feeling in your head. Of course, persons from India, they understand that you don't form relationships simply on romance. The real thing is commitment and duty. Therefore, in India, there is the expression, you don't, for example, marry the girl that you love the girl that you marry. Because the relationship is based on duty and commitment. Now, this sounds very horrible in the West. What do you mean you don't marry the person that you feel a buzz for, that you feel some yearning for? What do you mean that you develop appreciation for the person that you marry? This doesn't make sense. But it does, because real relationships are based on duty and commitment. It is that which endures over the years. And this duty and commitment is perfectly expressed in relation to Krishna. Because when the relationships are on the material platform, even the best of them will be broken by time. And I'm sure you all know examples of old-fashioned couples, maybe your grandparents, who were together all their life, married for 50 years, and then one person dies, and shortly thereafter, the other dies. We just had an example of one devotee in New Zealand. That's a 12-hour flight across the South Pacific. She had to fly all the way to Los Angeles because her father died. And, he was in his late 70s. And her father and mother, they had been together for 50 years. So then she came for the funeral and she flew back across the ocean 12 hours to New Zealand. 1 week later, this has happened last year, she had to fly back again because the mother died. Couldn't live in separation. So you would all say, probably, this is true love, that one couldn't live without the other. You can say like that, but better to look at the overall view and see that time is spoiling everything. Therefore, if we're going to have healthy relationships, we have to assist one another in getting out of the clutches of time. If we don't do that, then the relationship is just part of illusion. And this is why people have trouble with one another. People want to be for real with one another. Everybody likes to have that feeling that you're being for real with me, I'm being for real with you. Sometimes you get so enthralled, you become so ecstatic if you feel someone's being on the level with you, being for real with you. Like, wow, I found such a rare thing. This person's being real for you, being real for me. You feel so overwhelmed. And then when your relationships are really going good, you feel that you can look the person in the eye and understand, yes, you're being for real. Is it really possible, though? Actually, our standards for being real are very low. Let's think about that. How much reality do we really expect from our friends, from our marriage partners, from society? How much reality do we really expect? No. When you think about it, the level of reality that we expect from our so-called friends, our romantic partners, our marriage partners, and society is very low. This is how it really goes. Let's say you're thinking about a dear associate. Basically, that person's on the level with me 50% of the time, so that's pretty good. 50% being for real, that's considered quite glorious. And most people have relationships like that. Yes, husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, on the level 50% of the time. I mean, everybody's got to be on for real at least half the time. Can't expect everybody to be truthful all the time. How can you live in this world being for real all the time? Not possible. So mainly, if you can just be for real half the time, as long as we're having some sense gratification, then forget about it. 50%, that's high percentage. And what do you expect from society? The government? Oh, no one expects reality from the government. You vote, you go through the whole motions of voting and what happens after that. Yeah. And your friends, you know, if they can kind of contribute to whatever mood you're in, then they're all right, they're good friends. But no one expects too much out of people these days. Just like you don't expect too much of the government. You don't expect too much reality from even your dearly beloveds. Because you just think it's not possible. And why isn't it possible? Everyone knows at the bottom of their heart that when crunch time comes, you got to do what you got to do for your own sense gratification. That's what spoils all relationships. There's no sense of duty. There's no sense of commitment other than to your own sense gratification. That's why in India the common saying is there, that relations are based on duty and commitment, not romance. In other words, there's something higher, even on the material plane we're speaking. We're not speaking spiritual just at this moment. Even on the material plane, there's something beyond simply surrendering to your senses. There's something known as duty and commitment. But even the best material duty and commitment will be broken by time. Therefore, what we are yearning for is duty and commitment on the spiritual platform. When our relationships have that kind of connection, then the relationships are contributing to an eternal good, and you feel for real because you're beyond, your relationship is contributing to a goal beyond the scope of time. Let's just listen to what Krishna is saying in this verse about who is very dear to him. Krishna says, Yasmano vijate loko, loka no vijate chaya, shamarsha bayod vegar, muktaya satcha me priya. He for whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. So we'll read a short purport by Srila Prabhupada. A few of a devotee's qualifications are further being described. No one is put into difficulty, anxiety, fearfulness, or dissatisfaction by such a devotee. Since a devotee is kind to everyone, he does not act in such a way as to put others into anxiety. At the same time, if others try to put a devotee into anxiety, he is not disturbed. It is by the grace of the Lord that he is so practiced that he is not disturbed by any outward disturbance. Actually, because a devotee is always engrossed in Krishna consciousness and engaged in devotional service, such material circumstances cannot move him. Generally, a materialistic person becomes very happy when there is something for his sense gratification and his body. But when he sees that others have something for their sense gratification and he hasn't, he is sorry and envious. When he is expecting some retaliation from an enemy, he is in a state of fear. And when he cannot successfully execute something, he becomes dejected. A devotee, who is always transcendental to all these disturbances, is very dear to Krishna. Material life means disturbances. Now, how are we going to exist in this world so that we do not become disturbed by disturbances? If you can learn that art, then you become very dear, first of all, to yourself. In other words, before you can become dear to others, you have to become dear to yourself. For example, in this verse, Krishna says, Yasmano vijate loko. A person who never puts others into anxiety is very dear to Krishna. But you are also one of the others in that sense that the in the sense that the material body and mind, your material body and mind, are an other to the spirit soul. Therefore, when you think about not putting others into anxiety, that also includes your own material existence. We have to make sure that we're not putting ourselves into anxiety. When I say ourselves, I'm speaking of our conventional material identity. The spirit soul is never in anxiety. But in material life, our spiritual identity is unknown to us. So therefore, it's very important that the first goal is not to put yourself in anxiety. Then you can concentrate on the goal of becoming dear to others. Because indeed, if you don't put yourself in anxiety, you go a long way to becoming dear to others. Just look at what actually happens, though. You have a whole society. Let's just take this city of Los Angeles. I've been told that 10 million people in Los Angeles County. So, at some moment of the day, almost all these people in Los Angeles County are thinking, I want to be dear to someone, at least for a few moments of the day. But that's impossible unless you've mastered the art of how to not put yourself in anxiety. You have to, in other words, become dear to yourself by learning how to be for real with yourself. Then you can be for real with others. Because the last thing you want is to just multiply the illusion by combining your illusory identity with somebody else's illusory identity and then producing little illusions. And this way the world is supposed to go on. And you want world peace, economic prosperity, and so on and so forth. Doesn't work like that. Someone has to take responsibility for mastering themselves. Bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, teaches us, as human beings, with these human bodies, our first responsibility is to understand how to control our mind and senses so we can benefit ourselves. And the real self is the spirit soul. Once you can handle yourself, once you can drive your own car, then you can get out on the highway with many other cars. But if you can't drive in an area where there's no cars, if you can't manage your car, how do you expect to get on the motorway where there's thousands of cars, and how can you expect to do any good? First, you have to learn to take care of yourself. Become dear to yourself. How do you become dear to yourself? You don't put yourself in anxiety. How do you not put yourself in anxiety? You learn how to tolerate material desires. You don't feel that you have to act on the material desires when they impinge upon you, when they flood into your consciousness. You don't feel you have to carry them out. That is not putting yourself in anxiety. It's difficult these days, though, because materialistic society glorifies those who have a high materialistic fever. I'm sure some of you have had fevers before. You know what it's like. Your body burns, you got a headache, your head is spinning. Now, who would glorify you for having a fever? Oh, Jeff, you have a fever. How nice. Aren't you so fortunate? How high is it? 103 degrees? Great. That's what materialistic society is like. The higher your material desires, the more intense they are, the more people think you are a great person. They have expressions like, you've really got a lust for life. I'm sure some of you in this room have been made to feel envy of persons who seem to be the life of the party or seem to really just do what they crave and become so enthusiastic about it. Such persons are glorified as having a lust for life. Passion is glorified these days. I know one devotee. He's going to the university. And you'd think that his parents would be happy with that. He's married, this devotee has a family, so he has to think of how to support the family while practicing Krishna consciousness. So he's going to the university. And you would think that his mother is going to be happy, you know, my son's going to university. But no, she's always on his case. If you're going to go to university, you've got to do it with passion. You've got to put your everything into it. This is common propaganda these days. Whatever you do, it doesn't matter. What does matter is, are you doing it with passion? If you're doing it with passion, it's got to be right, no matter what it is. If you feel good about it, and you're into it passionately, then it's a good thing. And no matter what it is, if you're doing it, if it's not with passion, then it's not good. This is the standard today. So, the higher your materialistic fever, the more you're known to be a successful person. It's just the opposite. Whereas Krishna is asking in Bhagavad Gita for minimum qualifications. Understand you're not the body, learn how to control your mind and senses. There's absolutely no value put on that today in society. And people expect peace? Not possible. People expect happiness? Not possible. So first, if we're going to become dear to others, we have to become dear to ourselves. That is what Krishna is asking here. He, for whom no one has put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress and anxiety, is very dear to me. In other words, we have to learn how to be for real. This is a wonderful goal, which I hope that everyone here will adopt this goal if you haven't already. How can I actually be for real? I'm sure that many of you here are tired of artificial relationships, tired of pretending. I'm sure so many of you are tired of that. And you're thinking, how can we actually relate to people on the platform of reality? The fact is, as long as we're using people for our sense gratification, there's nothing for real. You can stare into someone's eyes all day and night and say so many sweet things, but it's not for real until you can understand you're not the body and help that other person to understand that he or she is not the body. But that's only the beginning, to understand you're not the body, your spirit soul. The next thing, essential for being for real, is to understand that the spirit soul is part of the Supreme Soul, Krishna. In other words, what is the spirit soul existing in relation to? This is why people are a little afraid of spiritual life. Well, this body, I know what it is. I know what it means to have material desires. At least that's something. But to be a spirit soul, what does that do? What's it like to be a spirit soul? Well, sounds a bit scary. Better remain the body. Once you understand that the spirit soul exists in relationship with the Supreme Soul, Krishna, then the spiritual reality looks very exciting and inviting. So, for reality, to be for real, we have to accomplish two levels. Number one, to understand we're not the body, we're spirit soul. And number two, to understand the spirit soul's connection or relationship with the Supreme Soul, with Krishna. Once you understand what you are and what you are connected to, then you can be for real with others. Otherwise, please analyze your life and see how, when we're dealing in non-Krishna conscious relationships, we're simply thinking in terms of somebody's body and somebody's mind. That means we're dealing with time. And time will spoil everything. Not only that, we're not really dealing with the person. The person is actually spirit soul. And if you're actually going to deal with the full person, you have to deal with Krishna. Because the spirit soul is part of Krishna. Therefore, in this way, I hope you can see that Krishna consciousness is the absolute necessity for being for real. Otherwise, what are we doing with others? We're using them for some temporary physical or mental or emotional tillyation. We're using them to, like, fill the day. I gotta have somebody around me. What about you? Yeah. Just like you do things to fill time, I'm sure most of you have that experience of doing certain things just to fill the time. Similarly, you actually have relationships just to fill the space. No one wants to feel empty and that they're living in a vacuum, so you seek to establish relationships to fill the space. Gotta have somebody around. This is all being unreal. But everybody is forced to act like that, pushed by the modes of material nature, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. To have real relationships, we have to establish things in relation to Krishna. Once Krishna is brought into the center of relationships, then you're actually being for real with someone. Then you are becoming dear to someone because you are dealing with them based on reality. Krishna is the all-attractive reality, the all-attractive reservoir of pleasure. When Krishna is in the center of our relationships, then we're actually dealing with people for real. Otherwise, no matter what we say, we're not on the level. My point then is that the very basis of material existence is dishonesty and illusion, no matter how high we think we are. But when we approach Krishna, things assume reality. Things become transformed into reality. It's like if you have a string of zeros. Prabhupada always gave this example. You can have 50, 100 zeros all in a row. It still is nothing, just like when you have one zero. But if you just take the Supreme One, Krishna, and add Krishna to that, in front of that string of zeros, then you have so much. So when you add Krishna to your individual life, to your family life, to your work life, to your school life, then all the meaningless things assume reality, assume the aura, or they become saturated with reality. Connection to Krishna means connection beyond time and space. That is the attractive thing about spiritual life, genuine spiritual life, Krishna consciousness. You obtain freedom from time and space, and therefore you can be for real, especially when you teach others how to obtain freedom from time and space. What is beyond time and space? Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and His pleasure with His devotees. That is the goal of Bhagavad Gita, to introduce you to the Supreme All-Attractive Reality, Krishna and His relationships. So, are there any questions? Yes?
What is your advice for someone who is truly happy?
What would you advise for
John? Not attracted.
Who is not attracted? Yes, this is a good question. So many people are addicted to living in the matrix of illusion. They actually like it. Look, don't think so much. Don't try to understand. Just satisfy your senses. You practically got to learn how much, what's the population of the USA? 250? You practically, the whole country is like that. Why the whole country, the whole world? Practically speaking. They want India to be like that. Forget this Dharma, forget this religion. Just become the computer slaves for the whole world. India is now famous for what? Dharma? For Bhagavad Gita? No. Why did former President Clinton go to India, to Delhi? To increase the number of visas. For who? For sadhus? For preachers of Krishna consciousness? No. To increase the number of visas for computer specialists. That's the thing that India is famous for now? So even in India, the land of Dharma, illusion is becoming a highly sought commodity. Give us more illusion, more, more. Bring it in by satellite TV. Bring it in somehow. We want the illusion. And, of course, the American dream is always there. Illusion. And people, they don't want to think. Who am I? What does it matter who I am? An example, I always say, I have a relative who retired now, but she went up to being the number two person in the New York City Board of Education, in charge of all the schools in New York City, millions of students. So, I once asked her, I said, who are you? Where do you come from? Now, this is number two, right under the, called in New York City, it's called the Chancellor of Board of Education, right under the Chancellor, number two. So I said, where do you come from? She just looked at me, what kind of question is that? Where do I come from? I come from my mother and father. And looked at me like, how dare you think that there could be another answer? Well, this is what you have going on these days. People do not want to think. I know one devotee. She was attending high school while being a devotee, and she was asking questions to the teacher. And she was, at the time, she was 15 or 16. She was just beginning her Krishna consciousness. So she was trying to get a real education. She was asking her teacher questions about life. And finally, the teacher just said in front of the whole class, look, you've got to understand that the kind of questions you're asking is just, this is just something you do when you're a teenager. But when you get older as an adult, then you no longer question because you're mature. But right now you're going through that teenage phase and you're asking questions like, who are you? What's the purpose of life? But when you become mature, then you stop this nonsense. So, this is our problem, that illusion is so highly valued these days and reality isn't. This Krishna consciousness effort is trying to gather together people who want to be for real. It's a very difficult task. In order to be for real, there must be sense control, because the material desires and the material body, they are spoiling reality. But when the material senses and the material body are used for Krishna's pleasure, then even the temporary material body with its senses becomes spiritualized, it becomes for real. This is the mystery of bhakti yoga. Any other questions? Let's see if some guests have questions. You're here every day. Anyone who's not here every day have any questions? Okay, you're on.
This has to deal with the devotional service. I was listening to a class of yours a week ago, and you were talking about how to, you shouldn't do devotional service.
Yes. He's asking, how do we do devotional service with our heart into it, rather than just doing bhakti yoga mechanically? I'm sure there's something in your life you put your heart into before, yes? Could you say what it is, or rather not? You stand collecting or something like that? Flying a kite, writing, what? So you put your heart into it. So you know what it's like. Everyone knows what it's like to put your heart into something. So why is it that we make a big mystery out of putting our heart into Krishna consciousness? Suddenly that becomes a very mysterious, obscure thing. But material things, everyone knows how to put your heart into something material. You just do the same thing that you do in material life. You put your heart into bhakti. Give it your all in all. Care, consideration, concern, affection, carefulness in the execution of duties in Krishna consciousness. Tolerance. Someone you care for, you'll tolerate when there's some inconvenience, some off day, something happens, you'll tolerate. So, all those things should be used in the performance of bhakti yoga. Then your heart is there. Everyone who's had a relationship before knows how to put your heart in and how to take your heart, how to remove your heart. The same thing with bhakti yoga. You remove your heart from the illusory energy and you put it into service to Krishna. And then you're spiritual reality grows. You're a devotional creeper. It's like a plant. It grows. Rupa Goswami, a great Krishna conscious spiritual master, one of our, beacons, and one of the foundations of Krishna consciousness even now. Rupa Goswami said, there's only one price to obtain Krishna. What is that? Intense greed. You have to have Krishna. Everyone here knows what it's like to be greedy. I'm sure you've all had that experience. Got to have something. Got to have it. More, more, more. Actually, the lolium, the intense greed for Krishna, is something that is not experienced in the material world in terms of living a material life. The greed for Krishna is so special. But you'll get a little bit of indication what that greed is like by understanding material greed. So when you become super greedy for Krishna, then you're making spiritual advancement. Yes? Exactly. She's asking, isn't it so that the chanting of Hare Krishna will purify your desires so that you'll desire spiritual things? This is a very intelligent point. The most mystical thing about the living entity is desire. Mysticism at its highest level deals with desire. And Krishna is the master of all desires. When you say that Lord Krishna is Yogeshwara, the master of mystic power, what you're actually referring to is that Krishna is the master of desire and satisfying desires. But in material life, we think we are experts in desiring. Yeah, I know how to desire. Had a few desires in my time. We think we've got it down. But actually, we know nothing about real desire until we understand Krishna. Krishna is the expert in desires, and Krishna is the expert in satisfying the desires of his devotees. So if you're interested in desire, and every living entity is interested in desire, desire is the eternal characteristic of the soul. So if you're interested in desire, then you must understand Krishna, because Krishna deals with desires in an unlimitedly expert way. His own and the desires of his parts and parcels to living entities. So yes, when you chant Hare Krishna, your desires become purified. The perfection of spiritual life is the perfection of desire. That is Krishna consciousness. Any other questions? Day by day. We all live day by day. It's just a question of how expertly we do that. So that's what you're really asking. Just like in the Bible, Jesus says one thing which is very profound, but no church can actually explain it. Jesus says, you have to be in the world, but not of the world. Now, how do you do that? That is bhakti yoga. How you use even material things of this world for Krishna's pleasure. You can learn this science. You can learn this art. What Bhagavad Gita is presenting, you have Bhagavad Gita you're reading? Oh, please, yeah. It is the basic handbook of Bhakti Yoga. So what Krishna is explaining is that the art of transcendental loving service to the Lord is a whole culture. It takes up your whole life. It doesn't matter that you're working or going to school or family or not. Everything can be connected to Krishna. That's why Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita on a battlefield to Arjuna. Krishna is showing even a war and armies and a warrior can be connected in bhakti yoga. What to speak of the ordinary things we do. So, don't be afraid to lose your materialistic perspective. I know what you mean. You will not, like, disappear, don't worry. And you'll still be there. Your bills will still be there. They'll probably be much less because your material desires are decreasing. But you know, your home will still be there. Your car will still be there. But suddenly you'll start thinking, how do I use my residence, my car, for developing my Krishna consciousness? Your whole life will take a different focus, especially when you start to chant Hare Krishna regularly. You'll see the same things in your life completely differently. So it's not that you're in danger of losing yourself. No, you're in danger of finding yourself. Now, how are you going to get that kind of confidence in Krishna? Just gradually increase your Krishna consciousness, especially read these books, begin to chant Hare Krishna, and you'll become acclimated very nicely. I mean, you think I just jumped into this all of a sudden? I'd be embarrassed to tell you how long I took before I actually started going at a good clip, you know? I'll tell you briefly. I would get the Krishna Conscious books from mail order. I didn't want to talk to any of these devotees. I'd get my...